Thanks for joining us, Monday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. This is part two of our crossover with Josh Lloyd and Locked On Fantasy. Today we are going through the back end of the Brooklyn Nets roster and telling you how those guys could potentially contribute to the Nets in the 2018-19 season and predicting just how many games the Nets could win next year. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Now, the two draft picks that the Nets brought in this season, Gavin, John and Musa at pick number 29 and Rowdy Rodions Kuroks at number 40. Two European wings, plays the three or the four, although Musa's come out and tells us he wants to play the one. You don't really think that's going to happen. But these are two guys who I find it really hard to believe that they're going to be rotation guys this season. They're spending a lot of time in the G League, in my opinion, but I think that both of them can be really impactful NBA players. And I think that Musa, out of this group, and especially getting him at 29, he's got a very, very small percentage, but a chance of maybe not superstar potential, but at least good starter, maybe bottom end star type ability.
Yeah, Josh, I don't necessarily see either of them contributing this year. I'll say that with the qualifier, I didn't see Jared Allen being a contributor last year, and obviously he was a real fantasy asset by the end of the season. But the Nets are just so stacked in that wing rotation, and obviously they have guys like Jared Dudley and Kenneth Reed. You're not sure if they're going to play. They signed Trevion Graham for a small deal. They still have Joe Harris. They added Shabazz Napier. So those guard wing spots where you'd expect those two to flip between really are quite stacked. And I think things change if the Nets clearly fall out of the playoff race. Then maybe someone like John and Musa ends up getting more significant minutes. He's obviously a guy who's proven overseas to be a really talented scorer and someone whose upside I'm really high on. Obviously, he still needs to put a lot of muscle on. Kuroks, I think, is more of a developmental guy. He is a nice jumper for sure, and he brings nice size to the position, but he doesn't necessarily have the well-rounded offensive game that Musa brings to the table. Here's the thing. I think if you throw John and Musa out at the beginning of the season, he's going to find ways to score. He's just such a natural. He's going to figure things out. And I think, if anything, he was a little bit underdrafted, but defensively, he would really, really struggle at this point. So I think the Nets are going to bring him along slowly because they frankly have the luxury of doing that with all the wing depth. You lose someone like Damari Carroll, maybe you have a couple injuries. I think Musa could break his way into the rotation. But at the beginning of the season, I would look at both of them as undraftable, and I wouldn't really value either of them in a fantasy context.
Yeah, I can't see them getting that playing time at all this season. But as I said, I really do like Musa, and particularly long term, as being a real valuable scoring type of guy. And if he can bring that ability that he mentioned about being able to handle the ball and get you 3-4 assists, that'd be really, really interesting in terms of his overall upside. But I think we'll have to wait a while for that to come to fruition. The projected starting five from this team, it's basically the same as last year: D'Angelo Russell, Alan Crabb, Damari Carroll, Hollis Jefferson, and Jarrett Allen. Let's start with Alan Crabb, a player we haven't spoken about yet. I think he is overranked on both ESPN and Yahoo. They've got him at 98 there. He didn't achieve that number last season. He was 121st in 29 minutes per game. He struggled with his shot until really the end of the season, but his second half of the year was more impressive than the start. Averaged 13 points and 2.73, so an excellent three-point streaming type of option. And in fact, over the last 22 games of the season, he was a top 70 guy in that time frame, mainly because his block rate went up and he was hitting over three threes per game and doing it really efficiently. Now, what are we looking at for Crabb this season? Is it the guy that we saw at the second half of the year? Is it the guy we saw at the first half of the year? Is he at risk of losing any minutes? What's your view on where Alan Crabb sits on this team?
You know, he's an extraordinarily frustrating player because obviously just given his contract and the fact that the Nets didn't get any assets for taking that contract on. He was a guy who came into last season with extremely high expectations and then obviously really struggled essentially through the All-Star break, just could never really seem to get confident in the first half of the year. And in the second half of the year, it was almost like he changed his form on his jump shot a little bit. I think more so it was just that he was shooting a little bit quicker and he was a lot more confident in his release. And because of that, his jumper looked a lot smoother. But there was certainly a hitch in it in the first half of the year. And then the second half of the season, he was a lot more consistent about really just flicking the ball. And his form was very compact. So I think if he can maintain that, and I'm sure that's something that the Nets coaches have recognized and really drilled into him this offseason, I don't see any reason why he can't be an elite three-point shooter. Obviously, it was over less attempts, but the season before last, 2016-17, he was second in the league in three-point percentage. If I remember correctly, he was hovering right around 45% that season, just behind Klay Thompson. So he's a proven track record of being one of the best three-point shooters in basketball. I do think he has the ability to do that over a higher volume. Do I think he was the top 75 guy he showed in the last half, in the second half of last season? I don't necessarily think that. I mean, a lot of it was fueled by those last few games against the Bulls. I know he had one where he dropped 45 points and under 14 shots. Obviously, that's not necessarily extremely repeatable. But I do think he could be an asset. I do think he could potentially be a top 100 player this season. I'll say this. I think you'll know very early on what you're getting out of Allen Crabb. If he comes out and he's really confident, he could really be a star and really one of the best three-point streaming options in the entire league. If he doesn't come out confident, I'd get rid of him as quickly as I possibly could. So I know I didn't really get to the bottom of your question there, Josh, but I think we're going to know a lot early, I guess, is the way I would answer that.
His last four games of the season, 25 points, 7 rebounds with 5 threes, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 41 points, 8 threes, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 16 and 7 with 5 triples and a steal and a block. So absolutely monster numbers to close the season from Crabb. But the thing that pushed him into that top 70 type of range at the end of the season was the three-point shooting. Most of his other categories, in fact, every one of his other categories was a negative in terms of value, apart from points and free throws, which were basically right on average. Rebounds were below average, assists below average, steals below average, and then the threes were up at almost two standard scores above the average, and that's really what pushed him up. He went from a guy that was a real negative in field goal percentage to being just a marginal negative. He went from a guy who was still strong in threes, but jumped himself up to be elite in threes. And three-pointers, as we talked about with Joe Harris, you can find them on the wire. So while his overall ranking number will jump up, if you need threes, that's great. But if you don't need anything else, he's not really providing that. So I think that that ranking number does skew quite a bit in his favor, because if he starts hitting 3.3 triples a game, then that number becomes really high, and it sort of masks what his actual overall ability is, just because that one category stands out so much, whereas in effect, he's providing less than average or average value in all those other numbers, which pushes him probably to maybe be the 100th ranked guy. And again, no problem taking him there, especially if you need those numbers, because he's going to be fairly consistent in providing at least threes. Whether the efficiency waxes or wanes, we don't know where that's going to go, but he's going to hit those threes. It just depends on how many attempts it gets him to get there, and whether he hits 2.5 or whether he hits 3.5 is probably a 30-40 spot ranking difference overall for Crabb, and that's going to skew that number quite significantly. Damari Carroll is likely going to start at the three this season. He led this team in minutes, amazingly, after being absolutely garbage for the Raptors. He was okay last season. He wasn't anything spectacular in terms of his numbers. The 111th ranked player does what he does. You know, scores okay, gets some rebounds, hits some threes. The efficiency was back, not quite to Atlanta levels, but at least better than he was in Toronto. He is a year older, of course, as everyone is. Do you think that that impacts him? I think he actually loses some playing time this season, with the addition of a full season of D'Angelo Russell, more Caris LeVert, some Shabazz Napier in there as well. I think that Carroll's going to lose a little bit of playing time this season. Is that how you see it?
No, 100%. I would think that last season he's never going to be better than he was last season. The fact that he shot 37% from three on 5 attempts per game, he never taken that many threes in his career, and there were only 2 times, I think, in the last 6 years of his career where he shot that well from three-point range. So I don't know if that's necessarily sustainable. He did show off a nice ability to get to the rim and bully defenders at points last year. But again, at age 32, he's not getting any quicker. He's not getting any stronger. He's not getting any more athletic. He's not really a guy I would target in drafts. The one thing that he brings to the table sneakily in relatively limited minutes is he averaged 6.5 rebounds a game last year, which is a number that he never really came exceptionally close to outside of his 2 prime Atlanta seasons. So I think there are a lot of indicators that he's going to fall off this season. And again, like, if the Nets are in the playoff race, like, sure, you can justify keeping Damari Carroll, playing him 30 minutes a game. He was, at least as far as advanced analytics go, possibly the Nets' best player last season, or at least their most consistent. But I think ultimately the Nets are going to pick playing guys like Caris LeVert and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson over him at the 3 and 4 respectively. So I just think there's a lot of signs that he's going to fall off this year, and he's not really someone I would target.
Let's talk about the fifth starter on this team, the guy that I think is going to be the best fantasy player on this team, and that is Jarrett Allen, who last year played only 20 minutes per night and was the 161st ranked player. He averaged 8 points, 5 rebounds, and 1.2 blocks, but really, really strong efficiency. I've already talked about the true shooting. He was at 59 from the field, 78 from the line. He comes into the season as the starting center, and I imagine that playing time is going to rise considerably. Post All-Star break, he was a top 100 guy in under 24 minutes per game. While I don't think he's playing 30 minutes per game, because Ed Davis is good, they can also throw some Ken Faried there as a backup center at times, I think they should be looking to see what they get from Allen, looking to see if they can develop him into their Clint Capella type of guy. And in 26 minutes a night, he has a chance to push that top 75, and he could really go higher, could average 2 blocks a game. 13 points, 8 rebounds. These are numbers that you might be at the ceiling level, but they are top 40 type of numbers if he can get to that level. What do you see in terms of Allen's playing time? He surprised me last season, but he looked really, really good when he was out there. Or is Atkinson going to do that thing again? And he did it again with Allen last season. It pissed me off, no doubt, where the minutes were sort of all over the place, even down the stretch there. You've mentioned it before, so I know that you think it, but he is that, you know, that key building piece along with LeVert and Russell.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's the most important asset the Nets have, and they really lucked into him. The fact that he fell all the way down to, I believe, his pick number 22 in the draft was extraordinary. And then last season, I mentioned this earlier, my expectation was it was going to be something of a redshirt year for him, and maybe he'd sit out the first half of the year, and he'd start playing limited minutes towards the end. And then he comes in, and the first 10 games of the year, he looks lost. He can't catch the basketball. Defensively, he's getting lost in pick and rolls, and it's kind of what I expected. And it was just so obvious. And the Nets didn't have any better options at center. They let him work his way through it. And then after 10 to 12 games, he turns into this totally competent guy offensively, someone who is extremely coordinated, obviously a good vertical leap, a strong wingspan, and he figured out how to catch the basketball, he figured out how to time his rolls, and he turned himself into an extraordinarily efficient offensive player. You mentioned that true shooting percentage, the best on the Nets, one of the best marks in the league. I believe he was top 5 in the NBA in field goal percentage, hitting 59% of his shots. After the All-Star break, he was the third best shot blocker in all of basketball, averaging over 2 a game. He's going to continue to bring that efficiency. He's going to continue to bring that shot blocking. And I think to your point, he's going to do it over more minutes. He averaged just 20 a game last year. I've been pegged for 27 this season. And maybe that's optimistic given the fact that his physique isn't necessarily going to change dramatically after just one offseason. But I think he will be more ready physically for the NBA season. And I think the Nets realize what they have in him, and they're going to give him every opportunity to succeed. And with superior talent around him this year, spacing the floor a little bit better, and someone like Jared Dudley to come in off the bench and maybe hit some threes and give him even more room to roll to the basket, I expect that efficiency to continue. I expect the shot blocking to continue, and I think he's going to do it over a higher volume. So I see him as potentially a top 60, top 70 guy. You said it, with even top 50 upside. If I was in a dynasty draft and he's available for one reason or another, he's definitely a guy I would snag up. I think he's going to be an all-star down the road.
Yeah, look, he was really impressive down the stretch. He's also one of the best value guys on both ESPN and Yahoo. Yahoo has him ranked 97th. ESPN has him 144th. That is absolutely nonsense, and you should be smashing that much earlier. He is a guarantee, I think, for the top 100 this season and a real shot at the top 50. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think, also provides some pretty good value at 139th, as I mentioned already. A little bit of value there on D'Angelo Russell too, but I think Allen Crabbe, if you're taking him in the top 100, again, it's all about the threes with him. I think that might be a little bit on the bust side with the blue swimmer there. Let's Ed Davis come across really strong offensive rebounder, really good rebounder, and if you need rebounds and field goal percentage on a nightly basis, he can actually help in fantasy leagues. But of course, we're not going to see him play big minutes. He is what he is. He's a guy that I've liked over the course of his career and a strong signing by the Nets, but surely they're not going to be looking at him to take those minutes off Allen. He's just going to come in and play his 20 a night and be really useful in that role.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I think literally every season there's a week where Ed Davis or someone similar to him saves me on a Sunday when I just need either like 8 rebounds and like I can't fall off in field goal percentage. The great thing about someone like Ed Davis is he really doesn't take anything off the table. You said it, he's efficient, he rebounds, he'll get a block or two. He brings a lot, but again, he's just not going to necessarily get the minutes to be someone I would target in a draft. I think he's your classic end of the week streamer. You need help in one category. You need someone who's not going to turn it over, who's not going to miss a lot of shots. I think he's really perfect. And playing with D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie, I know they're not necessarily elite point guards, but I genuinely believe they both have the capability to make any center better. A lot of people forget, but when Tyler Zeller was playing with them, he put up some of the best efficiency numbers of his career, and Zeller and Dinwiddie really developed a nice chemistry in the pick and roll, and he turned himself into a really nice player. I would argue Davis, even being a little bit older, is a stronger player than Zeller is, and I think he's, because of that, he's going to be a really nice streaming option, and he'll help you. He'll never hurt you by picking him up.
If anything does happen to Allen and there is an injury, Davis is an automatic must-own to me, because he will just provide 11 points, 10 rebounds, 1.6 blocks, 58% shooting, and he might only play 27 minutes a night even in that situation, but that's still really, really valuable. And then Fareed would move in to that backup role behind him. Do you think that Fareed is an every-night rotation guy on this team?
Not necessarily. This is saying it with Kenny Atkinson, a guy who likes to play 9 to 10 guys, but I just don't really see a clear spot for him. And we've gotten a lot of questions this offseason. Can you see Fareed playing some four? And then that's potentially going big. And my answer has pretty consistently been no. I mean, maybe Paulus Jefferson got hurt, because Dudley at this point in his career is not necessarily a guy you can rely on for big minutes. But I think the Nets' entire ecosystem relies on having at least four out on offense, even five out at points. And obviously Fareed just doesn't really supply any of that shooting ability. Obviously he's behind Allen. I think he's pretty clearly behind Ed Davis, just because Davis brings that rim protection ability that Fareed has never really had at any point in his career. So I just don't necessarily think he's a clean fit on this team. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe Atkinson is looking for talent anywhere he can get it, and he thinks Fareed can really bring something off the bench, but I think it's going to take an injury for Fareed to be an every night guy. And even if he does play, I really think it would be in limited minutes. So I don't really see him being fantasy relevant barring injuries.
They also brought in Trevion Graham, but he's unlikely to get many minutes there again, playing the same position as Damari Carroll, Joe Harris, Alan Crabb, Jana Musa, Rodion Skuruk. So there's just a mix of guys there. He's barely going to see the court. Same with Jared Dudley, who's there more for their ability to draw assets in a trade, which Dudley already has in that trade coming from Phoenix, but just being there to help mentor these guys. And Dudley can still play, he can still do what he needs to do, but of course there's just no necessity for him to get out there every single night and play. Just when necessary, he can come in there and play some of those minutes behind Hollis Jefferson and Damari Carroll in that role. I reckon that covers pretty much everyone on this Nets team. I don't think we've missed anyone there. Gavin, first of all, can you let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter, and secondly, what you guys have got going on at Locked On Nets?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You can follow me at Gavin Shaw. My partner, Josh Bass, who Josh has, I think, made a couple of appearances with you on the Locked On NBA podcast. I've listened. They've been excellent every time. Highly recommend anyone listening to check those out in case they missed them. He is at JM Bass. I want to say, I can't remember it off the top of my head. JM Bass, there's an underscore in there somewhere. Yeah, you look hard.
The underscore's at the end.
There you go. Okay, I'm glad. He's been like one of my best friends for years, but I'm glad you're on top of it, Josh. that's my co-host. And we recently just talked about a hypothetical scenario where the Nets get Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler next offseason. So if you missed that, you don't have a lot going on in your team's NBA offseason, you want to hear about a scenario where the Nets complete one of the greatest turnarounds in sports history extraordinarily quickly, I'd recommend checking that one out. It is the heat of the offseason, so we are making stuff up a little bit. We're fantasizing a little, but I don't know. I think the Nets future is extremely bright, and we're really embracing that on Locked On Nets.
Yeah, this is going to be a really fun team to watch. Yeah, LeVert, Russell, Allen, Dinwiddie, these are some fun players to go out there and watch do their thing. They have a fun play style, bombing threes. It's very Houston Rockets-esque in terms of the way that they play their game. So go check out Nets games, listen to Locked On Nets, and follow Gavin and Josh over on Twitter as well. And go and leave us all 5-star ratings. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. You can also find this show on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, leave a comment, do all that great stuff. Gavin, thanks again for coming on the show.
Yeah, Josh, so appreciate it. Had a blast.
All right, guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Spencer Dinwiddie.
Thanks for tuning in to Locked On Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd. Josh does amazing work. I want to make sure that you know that every single NBA team has a daily Locked On podcast. So go find your favorite team and subscribe to their podcast as well on the Locked On Podcast Network. Available on iTunes, Spotify, every place you can get your podcast. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Your company can advertise on the Locked On Podcast Network. And the first thing you'd get is a passionate, connected listener about a team they love. Now, the second part is all data. So here you go. You get an audience that's 98% male, between the ages of 18 and 54, almost entirely. According to Edison Research, podcast listeners are 50% more likely to have a college degree, and 30% of podcast listeners have a graduate degree. So you're reaching a more affluent, a better educated, and a connected audience for your company. We'd love to have you be a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can email me, David Locke, at lockedonpodcast@gmail.com. Put your company in position to succeed by working with us, the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one sports daily podcast network. Email me, David Locke, at lockedonpodcast@gmail.com.